Blog Talk Radio.
Yourself a little cushion with a two-shot lead. Emmett Talley, who has been a big player in Alabama's season now, looks to be, for the women, on her way possibly to an individual NCAA title. We saw Chris Kirk yesterday win on the PGA Tour at Colonial. 83 degrees, by the way, sunny skies. Luke Morrow from the Binghamton Mets will join us in 4 minutes. Chris Kirk won on the PGA Tour, and I think here's somebody, he's now got 4 career wins, one of which was in an opposite field event, but the rest of which are all very legitimate victories. And, you know, here we are talking about a guy who is Mr. Consistency. He just plays solid golf week in and week out. And when you do that, it's nothing flashy, but when you do that, it'll get you a bunch of victories. And if you look at him from a statistical perspective, this is what I find so interesting about so many of these guys. If you look at Chris Kirk from a stats perspective, it's like nothing stands out, but a lot stands out. For the season, for the 2014-2015 PGA Tour season, Chris Kirk is currently, got one win now, 3 top 10s, 7 top 25. I'm going to rattle off some stats here. He's 127th in driving distance, 102nd in driving accuracy, 129 in greens and regulation, 63rd strokes gained tee to green, 62nd strokes gained putting. That adds up to 45th overall. First in sand saves, 144 in total driving, 146 in ball striking, 36 in the all-around. It's nothing overly flashy. It's nothing that'll say wow, but embedded in there are some interesting things. He's number 5 in proximity to the hole from 125 to 150 at 19 feet 6 inches. He's first in sand saves, as I said. If you look at him putting-wise, he's 19th in putts per round. He is 16th in putts from 8 feet. Now, some of these stats are a little weird when they start going distance by distance, but 10 to 15 feet, he's 11th. You can see what I mean. He's just, you know, he kind of hangs around, gets his stuff. Look at last year, 80th in driving distance, 66th in driving accuracy, 129 in greens regulation, 43rd in strokes gained tee to green, 22nd in strokes gained putting, that's 27th overall. Nothing overly flashy, nothing overall interesting, but it's the consistency of doing it week in and week out on the PGA Tour that will eventually get you in the winner's circle, which he's now done with rather consistency. He got his first win at what's now the Sanderson Farms in 2011. He won McGladrey in 2013. He won Deutsche Bank last year when Billy Horschel hit it in the water on 18. He's now won Colonial this year. When he got off the web.com tour, he won twice in 2010, twice within basically a six-week period. And here he is this year, as I said, one win, 3 top 10, 7 top 25s. He's made the cut in 13 out of his 16 starts. And his worst finish, when he's made the cut, he's got 2 T56s and a 69th, which if you follow golf stats and you look at a lot of guys, you will know firsthand. That's really good stuff. Chris Kirk, the model of consistency, a fantasy player's dream. If you're looking for wins, it's a nightmare. If you're looking for wins, he's right up there with model consistency. Speaking of model consistency, that's what Luke Morrow delivers every time he calls into this radio show. Teeing it up, we'll have Luke on the show in a second. Luke, I was talking about consistency with Chris Kirk, and I just called you the model of consistency. How do you feel about that?
I'll accept it. It's a compliment. I don't know if it's necessarily true, but I appreciate the kind word.
Luke joins us in 30 seconds. This is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling.
Sometimes tough isn't enough. Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man, but lost it all to ALS, a muscle-wasting disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life in just a few years. MDA has been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found, because the battle Lou Gehrig fought is still being waged in households across America. Call 1-800-572-1717 to learn more about what MDA is doing to strike out ALS and save lives.
Welcome in, the Sunday Sprint co-host and one of the voices of the Binghamton Mets, and that is Luke Morrow. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. Happy Memorial Day. How was the day game?
It was good in that it was, you know, a nice afternoon, able to celebrate Memorial Day. Able to put up, you know, flags all around the stadium and whatnot. But the game itself didn't go too well, so the Mets fell 6-1, and the offense just never got going.
I'm trying to get the standings up here, but here we go. Here are the standings. The Binghamton Mets are in the Eastern League Eastern Division, and they are second right now to the New Britain Rock Cats, 4.5 games back at 24-20. Does that include today?
Yes, that is the most up-to-date record.
So you are 24-20. You're 5-5 in your last 10, and you've lost two in a row. How would you evaluate the way this team's going at the moment?
Well, at the moment, the offense is a little sluggish. Over the last 8 games, averaging just 2.5 runs per game. They've been held to less than 3 runs 3 times over those 8 games. So the offense in a little bit of a slump right now, needing to come out of it. And over the course of the season, the B-Mets leading the league in errors, committing a couple more than anybody else, including a few more today. So, but overall, it's been a good year. So the third best record in the Eastern League. The hitting, statistically, was one of the best hitting teams in the league up until this little slump over the past week and a half.
How has the guys who Met fans who may be listening to this, the Parnells, the Blacks, the guys who are rehabbing with you guys, how would you evaluate what you've seen out of them, if you've seen anything out of them yet?
Yeah, Vic Black pitched an inning Saturday, Bobby Parnell an inning yesterday, and then Black again an inning today. And the plan is always to have them go an inning, and for it to be a clean inning, to start their own inning instead of coming in the middle of an inning. So that was the case with all 3 appearances between those 2 guys here over the last 3 days. And, you know, they both looked good. On Saturday and Sunday, in both Parnell and Black's first outings, they each allowed 1 hit. For Parnell, it was a double that he said was probably the hardest hit ball he's allowed during this whole rehab process. But then Parnell was able to buckle down and didn't allow that run to score, struck out the last batter he faced yesterday. And Vic Black pitched a scoreless 7th inning Saturday with a couple of strikeouts, and then had a 1-2-3 7th today with a strikeout. So they've had good results in terms of their pitching line, but also what they were throwing. The velocity seems to be getting there. Vic Black, who was in the low 90s, both guys in the low 90s, Parnell touching 94 once, and the breaking stuff looks sharp as well. So promising outings for both of them. I'm not sure what the plan is moving forward, how long they may be in Binghamton, but a good start nonetheless over the weekend.
One thing that you and I have talked about a lot when it comes to rehabs is it kind of throws a wrench in what the team needs to do, because these guys got to get work. Were the Binghamton coaches able to kind of seamlessly make it work, or was there some haphazard stuff and having to pull guys earlier or figure out, you know, how to get these guys the necessary work that they needed?
No, I think it worked out well. And obviously, whenever you have big leaguers, you know, that's a real advantage to a team to be able to go to a Vic Black or a Bobby Parnell, especially if it's a close game late in the ball game. But it worked out that in all three appearances for those two guys, they were able to come in the seventh inning. So after the starter, their day was done. Weren't pulled early, you know, the pitch count, effectiveness, whatever it may be, the starter's days were done, and it lined up well that you could get those guys in. Usually the first guy out of the bullpen and start a seventh inning, which is also an important frame in the game. So, you know, a win-win for both sides. We had Vic Black in April as well for only one appearance at the time, and there's never been an issue with those guys in terms of maybe throwing off anything with the game itself. They've only helped the B-Mets cause in the four games that they've appeared in. Dylan G will be getting the start this week as of now. That's the plan, to have Dylan G and Binghamton this week. And with Binghamton already having a six-man rotation, you know, you push guys back. So that's something that if there were to be any effect from a rehabber, it would be more in a starting rotation than a reliever, or at least that's been the case so far.
I'm not mistaken, and I will look this up. I believe Dylan G is not pleased. I believe he thought he could come back sooner and come back to the Mets. Let me see if I can find this tweet from Mr. Pisano. But, you know, that's going to be interesting for, excuse me, for G, because I'm obviously, when you think you're ready, it kind of puts some pressure on you, because it feels like, you know, you're obligated to pitch well in that start to prove your point that, you know, I could have been at the majors now and you kept me back here for an extra start and now I got to run with it.
Yeah, and he pitched really well in his last start against St. Lucie, so now I'll just try to repeat it here in Binghamton. He felt he was ready to get called up back to the big leagues, and of course nobody wants to, no big leaguer, you know, wants to be pitching in single A and double A when they feel they're healthy and capable to get back to the big league. So you can understand his frustration, but it's a process. And, you know, the Mets said they want him to work his pitch count up to 100 pitches and more, as against, or rather his last start with St. Lucie, I believe he came out after 92 pitches. So they want to stretch him out even more, and they'll also help line up their starting rotation in New York moving forward as they plan to go with the six-man rotation. So, you know, as an athlete, you want to hear that reaction from Dylan G. He obviously wants to be back in the big leagues competing, able to help out the New York Mets. But at the same time, from a business standpoint, if you will, I think it makes sense for the New York Mets to set themselves up in that starting rotation up for the better moving forward.
This is a Met team that that's obviously having some issues here when it comes to injuries, and David Wright's been shut down and with spinal stenosis, and there's all sorts of issues, with the Mets. So getting G back and getting a healthy and pitching well G back would be very positive for the Mets. Have Parnell and Black, to your knowledge, kind of sat down with the guys in the clubhouse and given them the, you know, this is what you're working towards chat?
I'm sure in one way or another, maybe not, you know, sitting them down and having a conversation or, you know, talking to the clubhouse as a whole, but just by them being here. Manager Pedro Lopez said the other day that, you know, what they bring on the field is obviously very useful and helpful for a minor league team to be able to rely on a couple of MLB arms out of the pen, especially, you know, if it's a close game. But he said even more importantly is what they can bring off the field, you know, that locker room presence, and to be there for guys to ask questions, and also for those guys to be there in Parnell and Black and be able to set an example for the others. So just to be able to have guys who have spent, you know, like in Bobby Parnell, he's been in the big leagues since 2008. So to be able to have that experience in the clubhouse with you, if you're a 21-year-old at the AA level, you know, that's a tremendous opportunity. So both Parnell and Black are great guys, couldn't be friendlier, and I'm sure that they're certainly playing a big role these couple of days, helping out in the clubhouse with the rest of the team.
Talking with Luke Morrow here. Luke, any other major leaguers you've seen rehabbing on your tour lately that you've come in contact with, or that the Binghamton Mets have come in contact with on this ride?
I don't believe so. There's former big leaguers in the league itself. A few on Binghamton's roster, Josh Rodriguez and David Cooper, even Dario Alvarez pitched here in New York last year. A few others trickled throughout the league, Jake Fox a guy that used to play with the Cubs, and Brendan Harris, who is also with the Cubs and a handful of teams. So there's a good amount of big leaguers, or at least ex-big leaguers, in the league. But in terms of rehabbers, I don't believe there have been any others on the other teams. We were one game away from getting Denard Stand, but then he was called up just before Harrisburg came to town. So that's, I think, the closest instance.
That would have been fun, but, you know, that's what happens sometimes. The big clubs need the big guys.
Yeah, and also, actually, that reminds me that we also just missed Shane Victorino. We had played the Portland Sea Dogs in Binghamton, and then when they returned home after playing us, Victorino joined them for a couple of games that weekend up in Portland, Maine. So a lot of times the rehabbers of the team will rehab, you know, at the home games, so that you don't have to make them travel, especially with the long bus rides in the Eastern League. So we haven't had anybody else from other teams come yet to Binghamton.
The Eastern League, Eastern Division, is New Britain, Binghamton, New York, Reading, PA, Trenton, New Jersey, New Hampshire, Fisher Cats, which is where in New Hampshire?
Manchester.
And the Portland Sea Dogs, which I'm assuming is Portland, Maine.
Yes, you are correct.
That is some travel.
Yeah, and you have, you know, well, Portland, from Binghamton to Portland is a long ride, and then you also have trips to Akron, Ohio. So, I mean, I can only imagine what that's like for Portland. So, you know, you would hope they'd break it up with a team before or after, but, you know, it's all bus rides. So that's a long trip from Portland, Maine to Akron, Ohio. You also have Richmond, Virginia. So there's some long trips in the Eastern League, and that was certainly something, being in the Florida State League last year, that was certainly something that was discussed. Ron Malone, the pitching coach in Daytona, was previously in the Midwest League, and he said, you know, he was certainly grateful for the much shorter trips in the Florida State League. So it's something that's almost universal throughout minor league baseball, long rides, but there's quite a few of them in the Eastern League.
The Eastern League Western Division, which Luke alluded to, is Altoona, which is 25-17, has a 4-game lead. So that's Altoona, PA. Bowie, or maybe Bowie, Bay Sox for Baltimore, Harrisburg, PA, Akron, Ohio, Richmond, Virginia, and the Erie Seawolves, which is Erie, New York. Wouldn't it make more sense to put the Erie team in the Eastern Division? Because wouldn't that be a more logical opponent for you guys in Binghamton? Or is that Erie, PA?
Erie, PA, yeah. Well, yeah. You know, my geography isn't the best, so I couldn't tell you what the best combination of six teams would be. But I think there'd be, regardless, you know, there'd be long trips for anybody. And if it may benefit one team, it may not benefit another. I mean, Portland, Maine, you're way up there, so I think everything is a long trip for you, for Portland outside of, you know, New Hampshire. So, yeah, a handful of teams that are spread out.
Yeah, there's some teams that are close, but there are some teams that are very spread out. Your Minnesota Vikings, every time I have you on, I'm having you on for one reason, and that's because Adrian Peterson said something. And this time Adrian Peterson has said something without doing something, which is he's not going to show up. So your thoughts on AP basically demanding a trade now via his absence?
You know, I don't know if that's so much the case. I think it's the situation is being overblown. AP has never gone. He's never been one for OTAs. He was there last year. I think the main reason being that there was a new coach in Mike Zimmer, and that was really the only reason. So I was a little bit surprised. I was certainly hopeful. I was hoping he would show up and they would make nice and everything would be done with, and we could look forward to week one. But with all the money he lost last year, I was a bit surprised that he's passing up on more money now by not showing up to the OTAs. But it's nothing out of the ordinary with AP. And at this point, I wouldn't see, you know, the Vikings have been against trading him all along. And if they didn't do it on draft day, I don't think it makes much sense for them to give in now and try to make any trade for AP. At this point, I think we'd be better off if he were willing to have him sit out for the year as opposed to trade him. But I don't think it'll come to that. So, to me, I haven't been following it maybe as closely as you know, I haven't seen everything that's come out, but and as far as I'm concerned, it's not a big deal to me.
Talking with Luke Morrow here. Luke, this weather has been interesting. It was cold for a while, and then it got hot suddenly.
It's been nice. It was cold a couple of days last week here in Binghamton, but the team was on the road. Got down to the 40s for a few days, and then once the team returned this weekend, we've had beautiful weather. We're in the middle of a 7-game homestand. I finished up the first 4 games and have had nice weather for the last 3. The first game of the homestand was a little cold. It was the night game. But the last 3 days have been beautiful. The rest of this week is supposed to be really nice. We just hope that the rain stays away. There's a chance for some thunderstorms this upcoming week, so hopefully they don't affect the ball games over the next 3 days.
Any other interesting minor league moments? Any interesting Luke Morrow nuggets?
That's a good question. You know, I'm not so sure. It's always fun. It's always interesting when you have the big league guys here. Real buzz around the stadium. The fans are certainly into it. A lot of fans almost camping out, waiting for their arrival over the weekend, getting there as early as they could and waiting outside the stadium for Parnell and Black to get there. And so, it's been a fun weekend with those guys in town, making it more exciting for the fans. But other than that, you know, it's been the same routine, same story each day, handling everything that needs to get done and getting ready for game days. That's the great thing about baseball. You got a game almost every day.
Yeah, I was looking at your schedule here a second ago. You don't have many off days. It's almost like it's probably because of a shorter schedule. There's probably less total off days than a major league schedule. You guys are in a stretch here. You last had a day off this past Monday, the 18th, and your next day off will be June 1st. So it looks like you have a lot of Mondays off for some reason. I guess because of the bus rides taking a while.
Yeah, you know, it depends on the schedule. Like I said, when Portland has to go to Akron, you obviously want to plan either an off day or a series in between, something to help those teams out, and vice versa in terms of that trip. So, but, yeah, throughout minor league baseball, you know, I know with Daytona, I think we had 8 off days the whole season. There was usually about 1 a month. And that was true for all the teams in the Florida State League last year. And I haven't looked at as closely to the schedule this year for the Eastern League, but it's about the same because it's the same amount of games and the same amount of time. So usually you have about 1 off day a month, sometimes 2. And then, of course, the All-Star break in the middle of the season, which gives you 2 or 3 days off. So, not a whole lot of time for resting. 142 games needing to be played in a short amount of time, with the season being almost a month shorter than the big leagues.
Luke, you have not looked at your schedule. In June, you have an off day on Monday the 1st, Monday the 8th, and Monday the 15th. So you have more off days than you think.
Oh, wow. Well, June will be a good month then for those involved. 3 off days in a month. How about that? Making a liar out of me.
But no, sorry, you are not a liar, because in July you have 1 off day, and that's around the All-Star break.
There you go. So it all evens out.
I guess it all evens out. Let's look at August, because, you know, Luke and I like to see you have 3 off days in August, but in May you had, how many off days did you have in May? Oops, this is April. No, I went to September.
You're all over the place.
I'm Luke. I'm drunk here. Now went to October. All right. Clearly, this map, this thing is not wanting to go the right direction here. See, Luke, you got to fix the website map feature. It's not functioning correctly. In May, you had 1 off day. So it seems like every other month you have 1 off day.
Oh, well, there you go. We figured out the pattern in the Eastern League scheduling.
This is our big Memorial Day discovery, isn't it?
it's big news.
Hey, it is big news. Did you have any thoughts on Ricky Fowler's Players win or Rory McIlroy's Wells Fargo win?
Excellent job done by those guys. Not surprised. Those were my picks. Not surprised by the outcome.
So that was, you are getting better. A PR firm would love you because you gave a non-statement statement there.
That's what I did.
That was very professional. You know, that was, you know, one game at a time. We got to keep it moving deal. I mean, that was good. Well done.
Thank you. I've done enough interviews and have gotten enough stock answers that I know how to give one from time to time.
LeBron does not give you stock answers because LeBron is not a stock player. I'm sure you've seen the newspaper covers of that shot of him bending over last night after overtime ended. If we're looking at a Cavs-Warriors final, is this a Cavs win, or do the Warriors give them a fight?
I think they can give them a fight. I think it'd be a great series, maybe, say, 6 games. If we're lucky, maybe 7. But I think the Cavs at this point, the way they've been playing, even with the injuries they've had in the postseason, I think they're the champions. I had picked the Bulls to beat them, and I thought the Bulls outplayed them early on in the series. But then the Cavs took over, and I think they showed in those last couple of games against Chicago and the first couple of games of this series against Atlanta. They're really clicking right now, and I think they are the best team in the league. So the Warriors are very good. That'd be a great matchup. Hopefully that is the case, but I don't know if anyone could stop Cleveland at this point.
It's interesting because you've got two teams on super momentum, and the NBA reportedly has decided not to move up the start of the finals. So it's going to be June 4th, which means could have 8 days of lag time, which could stop a lot of this momentum and could help Cleveland a lot if obviously Kyrie Irving can get back together. Can get back healthy.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that would be crazy to go 8 days without any games, you know, waiting to the championship. But I've always said the NBA playoffs, and I think even the NHL playoffs, just way too long, and they need to come up with something to cut it down, make the first round shorter, maybe less travel days if possible, whatever it may be. And that would be unfortunate, being unable to move those games up if we would have to wait 8 days in between.
You know, it's interesting because Rob Manfred has talked about cutting the Major League Baseball schedule to 154, which I'm in favor of. I think the season's too long as it is now. Would you be okay with 154?
I would not. I did not like hearing that. To me, 162 is fine. I love the baseball season. I love watching just about every game all year long, watching multiple games from all the different teams and working in baseball. It's a shorter season, 142 games, but, you know, it can be a grind. But I enjoyed that too. So it would be a shame. Even, you know, I know that at one time it was 154 games, but I wouldn't want to go back to that. And then it gets crazy with all the records and what time period they occurred in terms of how many games played. You know, he's talking about getting rid of shifts, shortening seasons, doing this and that. I think he should just leave things the way the game is already.
All right, so this is a great lead into my final question, which is when we hang up and you get home, if you aren't home already, you're going to watch the Red Sox game on a DVR. You're the only person I know who watches baseball games via a DVR. Baseball games can be long. I won't tell you how long today's game was because it could spoil the outcome. But if it's in the 3 to 3:05, you know, hypothetical, the regular 3-hour framework, how much of the game will you watch and how much will you fast forward?
Yeah, I love watching the games on DVR because I can fast forward. And depending on how the game's going, I'll fast forward, obviously, between innings. And if I'm getting bored by the game, I go pitch by pitch, and I fast forward in between the pitches. But I try, when watching the Red Sox, to not miss a single pitch unless the game is out of hand.
Wow. So if it's a 15-pitch at bat, you're watching all those foul balls.
Yep. But, you know, it goes quick. You fast forward the pitch itself and a foul ball, that takes, 3 seconds. And then you fast forward, you watch it. It goes a lot quicker than still being able to watch every pitch.
That's a lot of fast forward, and that's a lot of use for your remote.
Yeah, it's great. I have MLB TV on my PS3. That's actually how I'm able to watch the Red Sox in New York and watch any game on my phone, computer, TV, whatever it may be, all on DVR at any time. So it's great. I get to watch as much baseball as I want.
You are a good at walking advertisement for Major League Baseball as well.
I like baseball.
Luke, I learned something about you every single time you're on the show. Thank you, sir. Have a great night.
My pleasure.
That's Luke Moore. We'll see you next week on Teeing It Up. Have a good night, everybody.